You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Ladies and gentlemen, this August the 30th, 2008 edition of the Liberty Hour. We are back 1 week later. We're all back, ladies and gentlemen. Despite the abysmal state of the world today, somebody upstairs decided to let us all live an extra week. And so I think, given that, we should make good use of our time. As usual, I am one of your hosts for today's show, Mark Glenn. Cub reporter with American Free Press newspaper. Please check it out on the net at AmericanFreePress.net. And along with me is my very good friend, comrade in arms, and war hero, Phil Turney, survivor of Israel's deliberate murderous attack on the USS Liberty 41 years ago this past June. Phil, are you with us?
Good morning, Mark. I am looking forward to a great show. We have two interesting guests I think are just going to enhance this show very much, as all our guests do.
Yep, no question about it. Of course, the good news, Phil, is that the SS Free Gaza and the SS Liberty that set sail from Cyprus about a week or so ago, they landed safely in Gaza. They brought their humanitarian supplies, and they have since then set sail back to Cyprus. And we just got word this morning that they landed safely in Cyprus. And, of course, the big news in all of this is that they're planning on sailing back to Gaza again. So if there are any criticisms that can be leveled against these folks, the one criticism that cannot be leveled against them is that they lack in some courage or bravery, because these folks have got more courage in one of their eyelashes than men such as George Bush or John McCain or Barack Obama or any of our elected leaders have within their entire bodies for the duration of their life. As Phil mentioned, we do have some very interesting and important guests scheduled for today. The first one is going to be with us here in just a few minutes, and it is General James David. Now, General David is a one-star general in the Army. He, of course, has retired, but he has made a name for himself writing about the situation in the Middle East. General David, as you may be able to tell by his name, is of Middle Eastern descent, and you will find his outlook on all of this very interesting, I guarantee you. The second guest that we have for the second hour is Greg Felton, who has authored a very interesting book that he's going to be talking about, entitled The Host and the Parasite, that basically deals with this very dangerous, incestuous relationship that exists between the United States and Israel, where it has led us now and where it is going to be taking us later. So those are our guests for today, and I see that we're coming up on a break here very shortly. Of course, when we get back, Phil will do his usual business of dedicating the program, as he does every week. Other things in the news, obviously, ladies and gentlemen, the situation with Russia is not going away. It's not getting any better. Hopefully, we'll be able to cover a bit of that in the upcoming 2 hours of the show. There's the music indicating we're going to our break. Everybody, stay tuned. We will be back in 3 minutes. Don't go away.
Well,
Welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen, to the first hour of the Liberty Hour, which comes on every Saturday, as you well know. And the Liberty Hour is a two-hour show, and why we call it the Liberty Hour, I don't know, but it's a two-hour show, and we're glad you're here. And as every morning, every Saturday morning, I get on the air with my good friend Mark and our wonderful guest, and we're blessed to be here, and want to thank, of course, RBN and John Stadtmiller for giving us this opportunity to educate and us get educated by you, of course, too, of the ways of the world. And the ways of the world right now are not very well, are not very good. And we're hoping for better things in the future. But I'm here to represent the 34 men that were murdered aboard the USS Liberty June 8, 1967, and 174 wounded on that very same day. The government of Israel attacked our ship in international waters. We were flying our American flag as usual. It was always flying. It was a clear, beautiful day. The Israelis knew we were an American ship and reported that back to their base. They put us on their war table as an American ship. And at 2 o'clock, they decided to attack us anyway, an attack that lasted just about as long as the attack on Pearl Harbor. There were over 800 rocket and cannon holes in the ship, thousands of 50-caliber armor-piercing bullets in the ship, and one of their five torpedoes that did strike the ship in the communication technician spaces instantly blew to bits 25 of our finest young men at the time, brilliant young men. And these were all men that were top secret analysts for the United States government, United States analysts from CIA, National Security Agency, and so on and so forth. But we're here to remember these deaths and hope that our government someday will fess up and let us know what exactly happened and why it happened and why the government is still covering up for the government of Israel. And I wanted to, getting into our first guest, I wanted to just read something that goes very well with what happened aboard the USS Liberty. And this is written by one of our guests coming over in just a moment. General James David wrote, this is to the Secretary of State Colin Powell back January 12th of 2002, and it basically the whole letter reads about the munitions and the tanks and stuff we give to Israel, a 1 foot 5 millimeter howitzers, M16 automatic machine guns, M50 machine guns, M1A1 tanks, you name it, we've given it to them. But there's one little paragraph in here that really strikes me. I wanted to read that, and it says, this is a sin against mankind, and yet we see no action from you or the State Department, especially since these weapons and ammunition are being used in the offensive operations. These crimes would never be tolerated if they were similarly conducted by any other nation. How can you call this a balanced Middle East policy when you deny the Palestinians weapons and ammunition to defend themselves from a brutal occupations? Stones are not much protection against an M1A1 Abrams tank. God bless you, sir, for saying that. And it is sins and crimes, just as what they did to the USS Liberty. Every bullet, every torpedo, every boat, every plane was bought by the United States government, and that means you, ladies and gentlemen, the taxpayers of this country. And no one should be allowed to get by with murder, not even Israel. Now, there was a UN Resolution 242 that was brought back in 1967, a few days after the war ended, and they've never abided by one single resolution. The Israelis have it, not one. So it's about time this government gets some kahunas and put Israel in line and treat them just like they would everybody else in this country. With saying that, I want to remember our dear people in Iraq and Afghanistan fighting right now. And sadly to say, in Iraq, 4,147 dead right now, all for the sake of Israel and George Bush and Cheney and the rest of his minions. Thank you guys for having all these people over there and getting killed, fighting a war we shouldn't be in. So, Mark, with that being said, let's get on and take it over, and let's get our good guest on.
All right. As we mentioned, ladies and gentlemen, this morning we are especially blessed, as Phil said, to have with us General James David. He's a one-star brigadier general with the U.S. Army. Unless I've gotten that wrong, he can correct me when he comes up. But as I said, he has got a particularly interesting viewpoint with regards to this whole situation in the Middle East. We're going to sidestep the usual military discussions that normally take place on the show, and instead we're going to talk about the real source of the problem, the reason why we're paying over $4 a gallon at the pump, why costs of everything are rising, why, as Phil mentioned, over 4,000 of our young men and women are dead. And it all really goes back to the one wound that is poisoning the whole body is the situation in Palestine, what is being done to the Palestinians there, the Christians and Muslims. And so, anyway, having said that, I'd like to bring on our very special guest, General David. Are you with us? General David.
Yes. Good morning, Mark. And I hope you can hear me because I cannot hear you very well. I heard you. Had no problems up until about a minute ago. Then all of a sudden, everything went real low. But
all right, maybe Manny, our producer, can do something about that in the studio. Manny, can you bring up the general's sound for him? All right, let's try that. How's that, General?
I don't see any difference, but I can still hear you. So you know, there's no problem here.
All right.
Phil, I just wanted to mention something about, you know, to Phil about the USS Liberty here. You know, I have in front of me the Retired Officers Magazine back in June of 1999, front cover where it's on the USS Liberty. The controversy continues. 30 years later, USS Liberty survivors still push for answers. I don't know if you've ever mentioned this on your program or not, but it was a very good article in the Retired Officers Magazine.
Phil, are you familiar with that?
Absolutely, I am. And if it's the one I'm thinking about, General, it's got a picture of Captain McGonagall.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good article.
Exactly.
In a wonderful magazine.
And the other thing I just wanted to mention on the USS Liberty before I get into my spill with the Israeli-Palestinian issues is that I have read the report written by Colonel Peyton Smith, submitted to the U.S. Army's War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and that subject was assault on the USS Liberty, deliberate action, or tragic accident. And I just thought it was a very, very good essay that he did, and if you have a chance to read it, I'm sure you probably have. I found that his conclusion was right on target. He did come to the conclusion that it was a deliberate act. And I don't think anybody could deny the fact that it was a deliberate act. Anyway, getting on to what I have to say about the Israeli-Palestinian. By the way, interrupt me at any time. I have done a lot of writings on the Israeli-Palestinian issues after I retired from the military. My official retirement was in 1995. After my retirement in the U.S. Army, the Georgia Army National Guard asked me if I would be an advisor to a few of the artillery battalions here in Georgia, which I did, and I became very much involved in the Georgia Army National Guard, serving in Germany with them for 12 different short tours, mainly with U.S. Army exercises in Reforger, Wintex, Able Archer, Crescent Eagle, and a few others, and we were the unit that I commanded was capstone to 7th Corps in Stuttgart, Germany, and of course that unit was called to active duty in both Gulf Wars. I have written many articles after my retirement out of the active duty, and I guess the incident that brought my interest so much towards the Israeli-Palestinian issues was back in 1996, a year after I retired. when in April of 1996 the Israelis deliberately and intentionally targeted a UN refugee camp in Qana, Lebanon. I'm sure, Mark, you're familiar with that,
yes.
Where 103 innocent, mostly women and children, were killed at that refugee camp in Qana, Lebanon. And, of course, Israel tried to hide the fact that it was deliberate, just like they've hidden many of their criminal acts as being deliberate. By the way, I should be warn you that I have to be very careful from what I say, especially on radio or anywhere else in the media, because I have been asked by upper echelons, and I won't give any names, but if I did give names, I'm sure you would be familiar with them. I've been asked to quiet down my tone towards my dissent against the Israeli actions, and of course I have agreed to, but I don't see where I really have. I've written many articles that have appeared in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
General, I'm sorry to interrupt. Sorry to interrupt, but we've got to go to a break.
Sure.
Hold that thought. We will be back in 3 minutes. Everybody, stay tuned. Back, ladies and gentlemen, for this August the 30th, 2008 edition of the Liberty Hour. We have with us as a special guest for the first hour, Brigadier General James David, who is, all you have to do is do a search of his name, ladies and gentlemen, and you will read some of his excellent writings on the situation in the Middle East. Of course, the thing that draws me to General David's writings is the fact that he writes what he does from a humanitarian standpoint. That, you know, these things that manifest themselves in political and military and even economic issues all basically start with the human issue, which is the fact that people for the last longer than 60 years have been subjected to all of the lessons of the Holocaust that we were supposed to learn, you know, brutality, hatred, racism, all of these things that we have been lectured about by the Zionists for the last 60 years. This is what is being done to the Palestinian people, and this is the reason why we find in the Middle East that it is a cauldron of hatred, of war, whatever you want to call it. And General David's writings touch on this. For the break, General, you were in the middle of saying something. Why don't you go ahead and pick up with what you were saying?
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, I was just saying that most of my articles have appeared in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution because I do face many obstacles here in Atlanta. We have the regional office of the Anti-Defamation League and the Southeast regional office for the Consulate General of Israel. And they get priority when they have articles written because it seems like their articles appear almost daily in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And when I see some of the things that they write, I just have to respond to them. And at first, I was getting a lot of my articles published. And it seemed that ADL and the Consulate General's Office would contact the Atlanta Journal-Constitution because they felt that they should not be publishing so many of my letters. Well, they finally moved the person in charge of the letters to the writer, letters to the editor. Her name was Kay Powell, and they sent her to be the editor of the obituary columns, which is kind of you know, ironic that going from one extreme to the other. So I, and by the way, she's still, if I'm not mistaken, she's still there at the obituary section. But this is the way it's been. It's been very difficult to overcome some of these obstacles because of the Consulate General's office. They have people there that seem like their full-time jobs are writing articles and letters to the editor. I've also been attacked by Deborah Lipstadt of the Anti-Defamation League. She had an article appearing in the London Standard trying to claim that I write articles for neo-Nazi sites, which is ridiculous because I never have submitted any articles to any neo-Nazi sites or anti-Semitic sites, as she stated. I cannot help if some of these sites pick up my articles and publish them on their sites. It is it's out of my control. They pick these articles up sometimes and they'll publish it. It's not me that is submitting the articles. But anyway, I you know, some of the articles that I have written about that have gotten a lot of controversy was when I wrote an article about a 4-year-old Palestinian child that was shot and killed by a M60 machine gun mounted on a Abrams. It might have been an Abrams tank, or it could have been an Israeli Merkava tank. I'm not too sure. But I got a call from the Israeli Consulate General's office, and they were very upset with me. And it wasn't that they were upset that the 4-year-old child was killed by an Israeli tank. They were upset because I had the nerve to criticize Israel for doing this. It just seems that Israeli crimes are not what we should be concerned about. What we should be concerned about is the hatred of anybody who would even have the gall or the nerve to bring this in light. Mm-hmm. So it's not the crimes that they're concerned about. They're more concerned about criticism of Israel, which is just has taken this country to an all-time low.
Well, General,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
You and I were talking this morning with Phil, and one of the things that I pointed out is what makes this situation so dangerous is that you're dealing with a group of people here who are very irrational by nature. I mean, they hold to certain standards that are particular to themselves that they will not allow other people to enjoy. They're not equal opportunists, to borrow a word that's commonly used in American parlance. They're not equal opportunists. They have a rule for themselves, a way of doing things for themselves, and then they have the rules for everyone else. Now, every time some Israeli winds up getting a broken toenail as a result of something that a Palestinian has done, well, it's splashed all over the headline news all across America. However, as you pointed out, the machine gun to death, and you said this is an M60. Now, just for the sake of people out there who don't know much about American military hardware, an M60, unless I'm mistaken, shoots a 308 round. It's 168 grains, flying somewhere around 3,000 feet per second. You can kill a moose at 800 yards with this. And there is the music indicating we're going to a break. Everybody, stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are coming up on the end of the first half hour, the Liberty Hour. And again, I want to thank our special guest, General James J. David. And General, to pick up on where you were at just a few seconds ago, talking about that Palestinian boy being murdered by a somebody on a tank, and then you were slapped down for saying, you know, the truth, and they weren't worried about the child. They were just worried that the word got out. Now, yep. That basically goes back to the United States government, too. They're the enablers. They had enabled Israel to have all the arms and everything they could do to murder the men aboard the Liberty, and they got by with cold-blooded murder then. And they're doing the same thing now. And as George Ball wrote, you know, if the United States the government, you know, will let Israel get by with this, they can get by with almost anything, and anything is murder. And, sir, what do you think about our government as a whole and the hold that AIPAC and the Israeli lobby have on our leaders from the president on down Would you please comment on that?
Sure.
On that, please.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, Mark, because that's probably the top of the list. I am so disappointed with America's foreign policy, not just in this administration, although it's been terrible, but in previous administrations as well. I'm very disappointed that America's whole entire foreign policy has been perverted to serve Israel's interests at the expense of American interests. And that's why I'm very active in my writings and active in my efforts to expose the real problems that we see today. And it's been my strong feelings that most of our problems that we see today, they lie in the conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I have felt from day one, I should say, you know, back when I started my writings, that the United States could have prevented most of our problems that we see today if we only had some strong leadership in the White House and, of course, in Congress with the courage to get tough with Israel. Instead, we have always taken the path of least resistance and have given the Israelis the green light to commit crimes that would be met with strong retaliatory actions if this was committed by any other country. You know, I recently, Mark, I recently wrote a letter to my Congressman Tom Price here in the 6th District in Georgia. And I wrote to him regards to the ongoing violence between the Israelis and Palestinians, which I consider to be the root of America's problems. My letter focused on the need to bring peace between the Israelis and Palestinians, something that the U.S. has failed to do during the past 60 years, but something required if America was to win this war on terror. You know, we just passed an additional $30 billion aid to Israel that will be paid over the next 10 years. I mean, we have bridges that are falling in the United States today that we can't pay to correct, to improve, yet we always have money for Israel. But anyway, he wrote back to me, and his letter was stated that the United States has outlined three conditions that must be met by the Palestinian Authority. Number one, a commitment to nonviolence. Number two, the recognition of Israel. And number three, the acceptance of all previous agreements between the PA, that's the Palestinian Authority, and the State of Israel. There were no conditions whatsoever that Congressman Price listed for Israel to meet. Israel has never committed to nonviolence. As a matter of fact, just before this current ceasefire in Gaza, the Israelis fired missiles and conducted raids into Gaza almost every day, killing dozens of innocent Palestinians. And the weapons that the Israelis use mostly are supplied by the United States. We're told by the media that Palestinians have killed innocent Israeli children with their suicide bombings. And there can never be justification, and I'll be the first to say it, in killing children. But let's look at the facts. Since the start of 2004, that's 4 years ago, the Palestinians have killed 11 Israeli children. This includes suicide bombings and all other attacks. During the same period, the Israelis have killed 452 children. Did you hear me? 11 Israeli children were killed compared to 452 children. Yet, if you go out on the street and ask 10 out of 10 people who are the instigators in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, they will all say the suicide bombers of the Palestinians. I mean, this is just ridiculous. And, you know, we only hear about Israeli victims in the media. We seldom, if ever, hear about Palestinian or Lebanese victims, even though if you take a look at that number, you will see it is so much in favor of the number of children killed by the Israelis. You know, just a few months ago, there was a shelling on a Gaza beach, and you know, we heard a little bit about the news, but the Israelis targeted a family. Well, I don't know if they targeted it, but there was a Palestinian family picnicking on the beach. And nine children were killed on that one artillery engagement. And the media made very little mention of this, but there was a incident the other day, or maybe a month ago, in Jerusalem about a Palestinian driving a bulldozer that injured three people. It was headline news in the Atlanta papers. It was headline news on ABC. It was headline news on my local ABC section. This is the way the media has tilted towards the Israelis. But one other issue I want to mention here, and I know I'm talking a little bit too much here.
No, that's okay. You go as long as you need to, General.
Thank you so much. Because there's one area that I am astonished with that very few people know about, and that's home demolitions. Do you know that the Israelis have demolished more than 12,000 homes since 1987 and created 20,000 homeless Palestinians? Now, a lot of people, almost all the people I talk to, they say, well, their homes should be demolished because they conducted terrorist activities. Well, to their surprise when I tell them this, that 12,000 homes include zero homes of Palestinian terrorists, because Amnesty International is the one that made presented these facts. Amnesty International do not include the homes of the suicide bombers. These are homes of innocent Palestinians who have had their homes demolished only because they did not have a permit to add on to their home because of their growing families. But permits are only given to Jews only. So therefore, it is impossible for the Palestinians to add on to their homes. Now, if this is not called apartheid, I don't know what else is. And poor Jimmy Carter, when he wrote his book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, he was attacked like you wouldn't believe it here in Georgia, in the Carter Centers over here. I had breakfast with Jimmy Carter a year ago in February. 15 members of the Carter Center, all Jewish members, resigned because of this book. And then we're told that we're supposed to have a balanced Middle East policy. To them, a balanced Middle East policy is 100% tilted towards Israel. That's what they consider a balanced Middle East policy.
Yeah, well, I have one other question for you, if I may,
sure.
Right quick. With the bullets, the guns, the bombs, the bulldozers, the tanks, there's so much more to this. The Palestinian people in this concentration camp they have to live in with dirty water and so on and so forth, and no heat and barely anything to eat, if they have anything at all. How many children are dying from that daily?
Exactly. And am I talking to Phil now?
Yes.
Okay, Phil. You bring up a very good point here, and this is what else I wrote to General Colin Powell. You know, there are two important conditions for receiving U.S. military aid that Israel continues to violate, and under the Arms Export Control Act, remember that, Arms Export Control Act, military hardware provided by the FNS funds can only be used for defensive purposes or to maintain internal security. Israel violates both of these conditions. When the Israelis shot and killed an unarmed Palestinian teen just a few months ago because he walked too close to the border, this is on his side of the border, the Israelis shot and killed him. No mention was made. Nothing was made, was said in the news. This was an AP article, but it seems that the media here disregards AP articles when they're critical to Israel. Now, this was the only reason given for this young Palestinian child to be shot and killed, because he walked too close. There was no investigation. There was no condemnation. There was no outcry. This is not defensive purposes. It was an outright murder. The weapons were used to kill this young teen, was supplied to Israel for Israeli forces by the United States. This is a violation of the Arms Export Control Act. Yet nobody does anything about this. The State Department, I've called them up many times. I get very, very angry voices when they hear me. But it's the Israelis that are illegally occupying Palestinian land. So why do we ignore this basic problem. We you know, Condoleezza Rice came out right away when the Russians invaded Georgia and South Ossetia, calling it a illegal occupation, called it a violation of international law. Well, illegal occupation and violation of international law has been going on since 1967 in the Palestinian territories. Why don't we ever hear them complaining about this? Why don't we ever see sanctions on it, towards Israel because of these crimes? Instead, we vote for more additional aid, like we just did recently on this $30 billion package.
Now, General, I want to cut in here.
Sure.
This may seem like kind of an obscure topic to discuss, but you know, since I have looked at the stats and the figures, okay, the overriding theme that seems to pervade through this, and believe me, I fought for a long time coming to this conclusion. You know, when I first started getting active in this, I came into it with something of an open mind. You know, I said, all right, let's hear both sides of the situation, blah, 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 all the rest of that. But nevertheless, having spent enough time looking at all this, the one thing that I cannot avoid, the one conclusion I cannot avoid coming to is that Israel seems to feed off of this. You know, one of the things that I have come to lately is that if peace were ever to break out in the Middle East, that Israel would cease to exist, that she has to have conflict in order to justify her existence. And, you know, I often think back to a very heart-wrenching article that was written by Christopher Hedges.
Yes.
It was called Gaza Diary. And one of the things that he said, I've covered conflicts in other parts of the world, but never before have I seen soldiers entice children and shoot them for sport, as he witnessed when he was in Gaza. Now, how would you come down on this theory that I'm proposing here, which is that Israel, you know, her existence, her very existence, is rooted in this idea of always being at war with everyone, and that if war ever ceased to exist, Israel would cease to exist as well.
Look at all their holidays. All their holidays are in celebration of their wars and victories. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that the Israelis live on violence. They have to have war. But they have a history of portraying themselves as the victims. And if you take a look at any kind of ceasefire, you will always see such actions by the Israelis to provoke a retaliation from the Palestinians. It goes back to the Golan Heights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the defense minister of Israel, Moshe Dayan,
mm-hmm.
won the War of the Patch, he even said on his deathbed that they wanted the Golan Heights so bad, but they wanted to make sure that the world saw this as Israel being the victim and won it from Syria's aggressiveness. Instead, it was the Israelis that kept firing on the farmers on the Golan Heights, hoping that the Assyrians would fire back to give them justification to go in there and take over the Golan Heights, and that's exactly what they did. One other thing, Mark, if you don't mind me mentioning, because I just need to get this in,
sure,
is probably the biggest obstacle to any kind of an agreement between the Israelis and the Palestinians has been this illegal construction of Jewish settlements on Palestinian land. You know, according to the U.S. roadmap, I'm sure you've heard of this, the roadmap. It was an agreement signed by both the Israelis and the Palestinians. Illegal construction of Israeli settlements was supposed to end, but it continues today more than ever. Condoleezza Rice will go over there, shake hands with Ehud Olmert, and, of course, the defense minister, Ehud Barak, and, you know, get a great reception and shake hands and kiss and go back after Israel says that they will stop their construction of illegal settlements. Within 24 hours, they announce signature on from construction companies to build 450 more illegal settlements. Now, the Israelis continues to thumb their nose at the United States, knowing that they get away with anything that they do, because we do not have a strong State Department. We do not have a strong president. We do not have a strong Congress that is brave enough to say enough is enough. And
General, on that theme, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
And we'll probably be interrupted by the break, and I want to bring up at least one call. But what is it that Israel holds against the United States that makes us roll over like this for them? I mean, we have never done this for anyone else. Is it simply, you know, the threat of not being reelected, or is it something bigger than that? Is there something bigger that our elected and appointed leaders are afraid of that makes them roll over like this for Israel every time?
One word, AIPAC, American
okay, hold
Israel
on.
Public
save,
Affairs Committee.
Save that thought, General. I'm sorry. There is that music indicating we have to go for a break. We'll be right back. Everybody
sure.
Sit tight for the last 5 minutes of the show. We're back, ladies and gentlemen, for the last 5 hours of this first hour of the Liberty Hour, which, as Phil has mentioned, is 2 hours long. That's just the way life works sometimes. General, go ahead and finish your thoughts, and then I'm going to ask if you'll stay on for just another 5 minutes after the top of the hour, because we do have some people who want to speak with you. Go ahead and finish your thought concerning the question I asked.
Yeah.
About what they hold over us that gets us to do these things that we do that are not in our interest.
Well, of course, there are a number of issues. You know, you've got the media is very heavily in the hands of Zionism. You've got the big corporate bosses that favor and support Israel, and you've got many Israeli advisors in Washington. As you know, our attack into Iraq was heavily approved and supported by people such as Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, Douglas Feith, who else? Many of advisors to George Bush were not so much concerning U.S. security as they were Israel security. We even know that the Israeli intelligence on Iraq from the Mossad overplayed the threat that Iraq posed on the United States, and the Israeli assessment was colored by politics, including a desire to see Hussein toppled. Even a general from the a brigadier general from the Israeli army admitted that Israeli intelligence was a full partner with the United States and Britain in developing a false picture of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction capability. He said that Israeli intelligence badly overestimated the Iraq threat to Israel and reinforced the American and British belief that the weapons existed. In addition to this, as I mentioned to you, Mark, AIPAC is unfortunately, Israel has a very, very powerful lobby in Washington, the most powerful on the Hill, and no one dares speak of Big Brother unless in praise or on bended knees. the American taxpayers have been forced to hand over more than $150 billion in foreign aid since 1960, and you have to credit the Israeli lobby for this. You'll never hear any politician up on the Hill suggest a reduction of aid to Israel. They know better. They know that such a suggestion would disbar them from the cliques of political power. And that's where our biggest problem we face today. And it's a downright shame. Here we have the Israelis continuing their violations on any peace agreements and international law, and more anger and hatred now by Muslims all over the world, but nothing more. Nothing is said. That is, the only thing that is said by Condoleezza Rice, the State Department, is terms such as unhelpful. This is what she used last week on the fact that Israelis were building more illegal settlements.
General, if you could, I'm going to ask you to stay on for just 5 more minutes.
Sure.
We've got some people who want to speak with you, and honestly, I'd like to tie you up and keep you here for the next couple of hours, but I know I can't do that.
Yeah, I have to leave.
Okay, so just sit tight. Everybody, we'll be right back.
Georgia plays their first game today.
All right, everybody, sit tight. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, for the second hour of today's program. We're going to keep the general on for just a couple of more minutes, and then we're going to bring up our next guest. General, we have some people who would like to speak with you, and so we're going to go ahead and bring at least one of them up, and it is James from California. James, come on up.
Hi, another great program by Phil and Mark there. It's so nice to hear General David's voice, another very valued friend of mine, and it's such a breath of fresh air to get his perspective on the program about what is really going on in Israel-Palestine. Jim, good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jim. Great to hear from you. Like I've always said, nobody has done more in the activism against Israel and their crimes and the illegal lobby that we have on the Hill. You, Mershmeyer, and Walt have been fantastic.
Well, I just wanted to make this made known, that it was inspiration by Paul Finley's They Dare to Speak Out book about that same Israel lobby, AIPAC, and similar. And you're mentioned on the cover of that. And just keep in mind, every time I do what I try to do with regard to getting out the truth to the American people, it's because of courageous America First patriots like you and Congressman Finley.
Thank you.
I wanted to make that that mention because General Dave has just been an inspiration to my effort to get out the truth, as I just mentioned. Just to touch on some points here, General David had just mentioned the book by John Mershmeyer and Stephen Walt, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. That's a must-read book, and you can go to israellobbybook.com to get more information about that. Also, there's an article that General David had written, which is a must-read. It includes mention of the deliberate attack on the USS Liberty by Israel, and it's titled Passionate Attachment to Israel, and you can find that over at MediaMonitors.net. But all you have to do is type in at Google "passionate attachment to Israel" and it'll come up. And also, I just wanted to make a couple other points. In the Jewish publication Ford, out of New York, General David had touched on Jimmy Carter and how he had met with him for lunch after his book came out about Palestine, and how Israel is practicing apartheid in the occupied territories. There's an article in the Ford with regard to how Jimmy Carter was not allowed to speak at the Democratic Convention. And it's just unacceptable. What basically happened is the influence of the pro-Israel lobby and many American Jews that put Israel and its interests ahead of America's, wouldn't allow Jimmy Carter to speak. So what they did is they put together like a 3-minute video about Katrina and had him walk across the stage. And that just, to me, is just incredible. And that just shows the power and influence of American Jews in our society as well. Again, not all Jews are Zionists. That has to be an important distinction. But there are many Jews who are Zionists that put Israel's interests first. Another article I wanted to touch on, Philip mentioned, I think Mark had mentioned Christopher Hedges. He has an excellent piece out that you can also Google online, and it's titled A Declaration of Independence from Israel. And that is just a must-read. It was actually a piece that Common Dreams, comic published, and also they weren't the original publisher, but they reprinted it, and also the Princeton speech that Hedges had made that was of the same title. You could find that all online. And I don't want to take up too much more of the general's time. I really appreciate him being on the air, and Mark and Phil having him there.
Thank you, James, and thank you for all the help that you've given this radio program. Literally, you have breathed fire into us, so I want to thank you for that. We're not going to hold you any longer.
Can I just make my last statement here? Jim, you are absolutely right about Jimmy Carter, and we can maybe thank Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York for those actions. It's a disgrace. But my last statement I want to make here is that we have an election.
Hold on just a second. We've got 10 seconds, and then you can come back and make your statement. So just sit tight. Back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to let the general finish out his thoughts before we cut him loose and then bring up our second guest for today. So, General, go ahead and finish your thoughts.
I'm sorry that I took up so much of your time.
Oh, no, listen, like I said, we'd love to have you on for the rest of the show, but we've got somebody else.
Right.
But we will definitely have you back as soon as possible.
Well, you know, we have an election coming up here, and I'm not too excited about either candidate, but whichever one is elected, this would be a perfect opportunity to show the American people that the Israeli lobby does not dictate our Middle East policy. If whoever's elected was really serious about this global war on terrorism, he could do more for victory with one step than all the bombs, American lives, and American money that has already been lost. All he would have to do is break clean from Israel and suspend all aid until Israel relinquishes its control of the occupied territories, stops building and expanding illegal Jewish settlements, exceeds the Palestinians' right to self-determination, and evacuates Jewish settlers now living in the areas of the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Without firing a shot, the United States could instantly quiet this guerrilla warfare that we're fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq, and restore the dignity and respect that I knew when I was in Europe, in Germany, from all the countries in the world. We have lost during the past 40 years. Whoever's elected has the power to end this reign of terror right now. If he or his successors are willing to break clean from the stranglehold of the Israeli lobby, politically, it may be a hard choice, but ultimately a sensible and a realistic one that would bring about true peace and justice in the Middle East. Thank you, Mark and Phil. I really appreciate it. I enjoy being on the air with you.
Thank you, General.
Thank you, General.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Go ahead, Mark.
No, you go ahead. You've been sitting there quietly listening to all of this, and I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I just wanted to thank the general very much for coming on, and you're right, Mark, we need to get him back on as soon as possible. It was very interesting, and I hope everybody out there took in what he had to say. And now it's my pleasure. We're also very, very, very lucky to have a Canadian with us today. His name is Greg Felton. And, Greg, I hope you're on the line, and I wish you would please go ahead, and I know you've got a book out and you would like to get some of those books sold. And so, first of all, give us a little bit, let us a little know a little bit about yourself and your book and why you're on the air.
Well, thank you very much, Phil and Mark. I'm very glad to be here. I was tipped to your show by a good friend of mine in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Mimi Adams, and I am familiar with the USS Liberty and the atrocity that was inflicted on it on June 8, 67. And I know the work that you people do, and I'm very happy to be on the show to contribute in whatever way I can to helping the American public realize that they no longer have a republic, and that the American people have to take matters perhaps into their own hands to take back their country from the Israel lobby, which has essentially commandeered it for its own purposes. I'm a journalist here in Vancouver, in the Vancouver area in British Columbia. I've been a journalist since about 1993. I've written on the Middle East regularly since about 1994, 95. And after starting writing about the Middle East, I came to realize that there is perhaps the world's greatest untold story, at least unrecognized story, in the degree to which Israel has managed to perpetrate war crimes against Palestine and has been getting away with it because the United States, and particularly the United States and Great Britain, have allowed it to do so. One of my mottos is that just injustice just doesn't happen. It's allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel was allowed to happen. And as I look at the United States today, especially since 2000, I see a country that is sliding faster and faster into totalitarianism.
Mm-hmm.
I began to look at why this happened. And I began to look at the rather bizarre way in which news has been reported since the September the 11th attack. And I came to the conclusion that one cannot make sense or any rational or come to any rational judgments about the United States government if we assume that the United States began to go downhill with the advent of George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do that, then you're faced with a very bizarre scenario. You're expected to believe that the United States Republic, which had been in existence since 1776, more than 250 years, almost 250 years, all of a sudden collapsed out of nowhere. It committed political suicide
mm-hmm.
with the passage of the USA Patriot Act. And I had to ask myself, why does a republic commit suicide for no apparent reason?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the United States had had enemies within its borders before. I mean, we had Richard Nixon and the illegal bombing of Cambodia, the illegal cover-up of that, and the Watergate break-in. And yet, after all that criminality, the United States justice system held. It managed to protect itself. It brought impeachment charges against Nixon, although he resigned rather than face them. The U.S. Republic worked. Flawed though it may have been, it did work. Why is it not working today? And I went back and I looked at the development of U.S. policy before George W. Bush, and I came to the conclusion, and this is going to contradict a little bit your previous guest, I came to the conclusion that the United States no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
And that may sound like a bizarre, almost a non-cognitive statement, but it is my view that beginning with the presidency of Ronald Reagan, the United States began to slip into fascism because in the period between the rise of Jimmy Carter and Reagan's presidency, the Israel lobby managed to cement its control over the electoral process of America. Jimmy Carter was the last president of the republic.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the last president that was elected by the American people. All other presidents have been elected by pressure groups, the Christian lobby, the neocon lobby, and the Israel lobby.
Mm-hmm.
We have had essentially a gangsterism in place since
mm-hmm.
1980.
Mm-hmm.
And my book charts this development and the consequences of this degeneration into essentially a criminal gangsterism. And the conclusion is that the American Republic no longer exists. The Israel lobby has managed to infiltrate, and I say consume like a parasite, the U.S. The U.S. government, industry, media, to the point where it is no longer possible to speak rationally of an American national interest, because American national interest no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
The United States exists to serve Israel. And you can see this in the manner in which U.S. policy in the Middle East has morphed from one of oil-first policy, wherein the United States took no interest in the lives or welfare of the people of the Middle East, into one where it's promoting and defending and concocting apologies for Israel's continued destruction of Palestine, beggaring of Iraq, and now threatening to attack Iran.
So my Go ahead.
My book is called The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. And it's available from my website, gregfelton.com. I had a publisher, but she turned out to be a crook.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Carol Adler. Stay away from her.
Okay.
She's a nasty. Yeah, so I have the book now, and I'm looking for a new publisher.
Well, listen, obviously I can't make any deals over the air right now, but I certainly know a few people who would be interested in publishing that book. I'm looking at the cover of the book right now, and, you know, what strikes me, first of all, the graphics on it are excellent, and the picture that is depicted, I mean, basically your cover says it all. You don't have to even open the book in understanding what the thesis of your book is. Now, what strikes me about this, Greg, is that, of course, you're going to hear the typical howls out of the pro-Israel groups such as ADL and AIPAC and whatnot over the thesis of this book. But, you know, and, of course, you would be derided and called a conspiracy theorist and all the rest of it. But, see, if your book, instead of if it were The Host and the Parasite, How Islam's Fifth Column Consumed America, and instead of having guys such as Feist and Scooter Libby and Crystal and all the rest of them on the front, if you had a bunch of bearded, swarthy Muslims on there, well, of course, your book would be a bestseller. It would be on the top 10 list of New York Times bestseller books. So this very fact alone, the fact that we are not allowed to discuss things that really are, it's like Dr. Snigowski, we had him on last weekend, and he has written a book entitled The Transparent Cabal. And, of course, the title in that is that, they're not bothering to hide these facts anymore. You see, my theory is, as you mentioned, you use the word gangsterism, and I think that that's a very operative word. You know, gangsters, the only difference between a gangbanger who has his pants pulled halfway down his rear end and lots of gold chains and whatnot, who goes beating people up with baseball bats, versus somebody like Al Capone, really is just the dress, which we're going to pick up after the break. Everybody stay tuned along with your calls. We will be right back. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, for the second hour of this week's show. We have with us right now Greg Felton, author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. And the point that I was making for the break, Greg, is that there is this thing with gangsters that they like to live large. They like to be out in the open and to say to everybody, we're here, deal with us. And so I think that you make a very good point here that prior to Ronald Reagan, these gangsters who have called themselves now the neocons, they really were a subterranean group of people. They knew that they could not come out into the open and live large like they want to do. But now all of that has changed.
What happened was in chapter two of my book, I talk about the troika, the fascist troika that was the Zionist Christian, Zionist Jews, and the neocons, all of whom existed in American society for some time. They had existed since the late 19th century, at least. But they were always sort of in the shadows, as you mentioned. They were never publicly declared. These are the kind of people who persecuted the blacks in the Deep South. These were the people who believed in selfishness as a moral virtue.
Mm-hmm.
They were never really taken very seriously. And even under President George Bush, after Reagan, he called the radical Jews in the Pentagon the crazies.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had no regard at all for Wolfowitz or Feith or Elliot Abrams or any of the people that we now associate with war for Israel's sake. He hated them.
You're talking about George Bush the elder, right, Greg?
Yeah, George Bush the president, not George Bush the psychopath. So the fact is, these people had been around for a long time, and what happened was, as I argued in my book, the Vietnam War did much more than just lead the United States into a defeat in some rice paddy in Southeast Asia. It essentially destroyed the American psyche. It traumatized America,
mm-hmm.
largely because it was the first time the American public could see their country acting as an aggressor, as a killer, as a torturer, as a destroyer of a whole people. And what happened to the American public was they couldn't take it anymore. They demanded America get out of Vietnam. And the anti-war movement, combined with Lyndon Johnson's Great Society public spending programs, caused a counter-reaction within the American political community. And many people, especially far left-leaning Jewish politicians and Jewish activists, saw this as a threat to America's survival. The anti-war movement, the public spending, my God, that's going to make us a lazy socialist country. So we have to stop this. And so they embraced the radical teachings of a professor at Northwestern University called Leo Strauss. And Leo Strauss believed that America, to all intents and purposes, mind you, had to turn fascist in order to protect itself from fascism. That's a rather crude way of putting it, but that's what it ended up being.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had this very strange reaction throughout the late 60s and early 70s where people like Norman Pud Horowitz or other people in the radical right, radical left, decided to form sort of a small little mutual admiration society where they would publish these little economic tracts and they would try to get the point of view out that America had to start becoming stronger in their point of view. And what they did was they formed a common cause with the radical Christian groups who were anti-pornography, anti-equal rights amendments, anti-abortion, anti-everything that had anything to do with challenging what was then considered to be traditional biblical dictates over human behavior. And so what happened was in 1973, Supreme Court of the United States passed the Roe versus Wade decision, which decriminalized abortion. And in that same year, Paul Weyrich, among others, formed something called the Heritage Foundation, which still exists. And the Heritage Foundation was the very first, what we call, conservative think tank. And it started a chain reaction of think tanks and parallel government institutions that would come to take power away from Congress and vested in the hands of radical anti-democratic agitators. And in fact, 11 members of the Heritage Foundation found their way into Ronald Reagan's government. And so essentially it was the Christians who elected Reagan, and the late Jerry Falwell admitted as much in 1980. So we had essentially from 1970 to about 1980, we had a transition period. We had the high watermark of liberalism with the Roe versus Wade decision, and then the slide into reaction, the slide into anti-statist, me-first selfishness, an anti-intellectualism. And it derived much of its strength from the fact that the great universities and centers of the United States, the best and the brightest America could produce, led America to ignominious defeat in Vietnam. And if the people like Jack Kennedy and Robert McNamara, McGeorge Bundy, Alan, and, you know, these people, if these people could do it, if these people could behave so stupidly and so criminally, well, maybe it's time to put our faith into the religious people. And so,
Greg, hold that thought, if you would. We have to have a break, and we will be right back. Everybody, stay tuned. We will be bringing up your call, so don't go away.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen, for this week's Liberty Hour. We have with us today author Greg Felton. Greg, I wanted to, quantify what you were saying. What you're basically saying is that these Israel first, and let's just put it in the same kind of terms that you use, fifth columnists, they use these things that happened, such as Roe versus Wade and the general sliding into the left, as Trojan horses for recruiting the American Christian right into enlisting themselves into the service of benefiting Israel. Is that what you're saying?
That's pretty much it. You see, what happened was in 1967 when Israel defeated the Palestinians, as you know, this is the same time when the Liberty was attacked. Israel's victory in that war, which wasn't much of a war, it was more of an unprovoked aggression, essentially changed the face of Israel in the United States. All of a sudden it became acceptable to be both pro-Israeli and pro-American.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, it was no Jew would want to be known as a pro-Israeli Jew, because that might lead to the suspicion that he harbored dual loyalties and was less than a full American.
Mm-hmm.
But even back as far as the 1940s, I mean, the Israel lobby, the Jewish lobbies in America went out of their way to go after left-wing Jews, because anybody who was a communist or even socialist was not fully American in their view. And they wanted to be thought of as just as American as everybody else. And so with the rise of Israel as a focus of American policy in the Middle East, as something that was high in America's mind, you're quite right. The Israel lobby, the Jewish element of it, tended to be very much below the surface. It wasn't really the part of the iceberg that you saw. You saw the Christians like Reagan go up, and they would give these vacuous rah-rah speeches. And that was the face of the new conservatism. But below the iceberg, of course, is nine-tenths of it. And much of that was the Israel lobby. Now, I do want to come back to a very good point you made at the top about a bully state or people who are terrorists, that they project an image much larger than themselves. And this is precisely why Israel has been so successful. Israel really is a postage stamp area in the Eastern Mediterranean. It doesn't have much in the way of size. It's puny. But it projects an image that's thousands upon thousands of times greater. And it does so because it has people in very influential places all over the world, especially in North America. So when Israel speaks, you don't so much see the voice of a small little occupation empire. You have a whole international culture speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if the United States had government agents in every single government in the world, and whenever government spoke, it was the Americans who were writing the speeches, dictating
mm-hmm.
policy.
Mm-hmm.
The Israel lobby in the United States exists for the sole purpose, not sole, but for the purpose of perpetuating their own existence, but also running interference for Israel, destroying, attacking people who want to have justice for the Palestinians, and for people who, you know, want to concoct sophistries to justify the continued theft of Arab land in the name of, you know, biblical real estate policy. So you have this strange symbiosis between the lobby in the States, in North America, and Israel. And this is why my book is titled The Fifth Column. I don't say that Israel has consumed America. Israel can't consume America. Israel's fifth column, which is like the bully's projection of Israel into the United States. Because if you look at who sits in Congress, almost all Republicans and a vast majority of Democrats are pro-Zionist people. And they got into power progressively over the last 25 years. Some of them, of course, maybe a bit longer. But this is how the lobby has consumed America. It has put its own people in Congress. Nominally, it was the Christian right, the Ronald Reagan Christians and the neocons who wanted to undo the shame and damage of the Vietnam War era, the stagflation, the OPEC oil crisis. They wanted to essentially wipe the slate clean and start over. And they turned their backs on their history, and they pretended that the world was some sort of Pollyanna-ish dreamland. And these people got into power, and the Israel lobby glommed onto them because Zionist Christians and Zionist Jews have a common interest, and that is getting the Arabs out of Palestine and bringing all the Jews of the world back into Palestine because Jesus is supposed to swan down from heaven and make their return appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of mythology animates the Christians, even though they are the most vigorously and viciously anti-Jewish people on the face of the earth. They have this corrupt marriage of convenience, and the object of their hatred, their mutual hatred, is the Arabs. And this is why it's been very difficult to have any sort of justice for Palestine, because Americans, even though they have no reason to hate Palestine, they have no bone to pick with anyone in the Muslim world. It is the Zionist Jews who are manipulating American foreign policy, who are making it very difficult for America to behave in the national interest.
Mm-hmm.
Inasmuch as I agree with the general who was on before me, I would love to see an American president get up and stand up to the lobby. But I think he has failed to note that there is no such thing as an American president.
Mm-hmm.
There is only an Israeli viceroy, an Israeli
mm-hmm.
stooge. And one of the most amazing things I saw was a piece of news that someone sent me last night about why Jimmy Carter was not invited to speak at the Democratic Convention. He is the last living Democratic president. And it's his support for Palestine that has blocked him from speaking. And one person said he didn't show enough respect for Israel,
mm-hmm.
which is another way of saying he didn't show much respect for the Godfather. You know? You might say that Marlon Brando is there, and someone dissed Marlon Brando. He feeds with the fishes now, like Luca Brasi. You know? So Jimmy Carter is persona non grata because he has a moral sense, because he is intelligent. And this is why the lobby fears Barack Obama. And even though he's been an abjectly embarrassing, sycophantic toady to the Israel lobby, and he's disgraced himself and showed that just how little control he has over his own political future, Obama is nevertheless an intelligent man. Unlike John Insane McCain, who probably has 7 out of 10 markers for Alzheimer's already manifest,
mm-hmm.
John McCain would be simply a bonehead that would take orders from the lobby and not even
mm-hmm.
think twice about it. Obama is a smart man, and that's why the lobby fears him.
Phil Turney.
Yeah, Greg, I just wanted to echo a couple things that you said, and I certainly agree with your analysis of our own government. But you look at Joe Israel Biden. Now, first he said you don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist, and he's a Zionist. Now, these politicians we have in this country are stepping all over themselves to be more Jewish and more Zionist than the other person that's running for office or running for president or running for dog catcher. And it comes down to this. We have no more country again. Our country is not our country. Our country is based on the lobbies, the AIPAC, Israeli firsters, the Hagees of the world. And how in the world are we ever going to get back to a country that believes in, the Constitution protecting our nation against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Now, I consider Israel a enemy of the United States for simply what they did to USS Liberty 1967. They declared war on this country, and they got by with murder of American citizens. And I'm pissed off about it, and will be till the day I die. And I'd like your comments on that, please.
Well, you're quite right. What the Israelis did to the USS Liberty was an act of war, an unprovoked act of war, and America should have bombed the bejesus out of Israel. The problem is that Lyndon Johnson was such a cheat, was such a nasty piece of work. He needed support for his destructive war in Vietnam, and the only people who were giving him one of the few people giving him unqualified support were the Israelis. And he knew that. He knew where his support was. So he sacrificed the American seamen on that ship so that he could have his rhetorical support for the Vietnam War. And it was John McCain's father who recalled the rescue boats. So that should tell you something about the legacy of John McCain and what kind of people that you're going to get in office. So you're quite right. We have no republic left. There is no such thing as the United States. And unfortunately, I don't know of a way out of this apart from armed insurrection. I mean, going back to the 18th century, I mean, King George III behaved with contempt toward the American colonies. Taxation without representation, the stamp tax, the corn tax, the tea tax, forcing Americans to quarter soldiers in the colonies. I mean, it was horrible. Americans had no say in anything they did. All the materials that they generated with their economy went back to Britain. It was a mercantilist system, and that's what led to the American Revolution. However bad King George III was, he was an angel compared to George Bush, who is a psychotic and demented, and I don't wish to sound overly, hyperbolic here, as Hitler. And I have, in my book, I have two speeches, one from Hitler, one from Bush. And they were thematically identical. Between Bush's attack on Iraq and Hitler's attack on Russia. On Poland, sorry. And there's absolutely similarity of claiming to speak for the greater good of the people, that this was an act of defense. It's frightening the degree to which fascism has become the national policy of the United States. I don't know how you can reform Congress if Congress is corrupt, or how the Supreme Court can be reformed if you have four liars on the Supreme Court who care more about propping up a fascist regime than in upholding the Constitution. Scalia, Thomas, Roberts, and Alito have to be arrested. That's my point of view. You have to arrest these people because they do not speak for America. And I don't know how it's going to come about that Americans take back their country, if they can take it back. And what does concern me is that if the American economy gets so bad and people start starving so much, or they lose their homes or their jobs, or it turns out to be a magnitude worse than the Depression, would there be enough of a groundswell of resentment to go after the American government, to go after the lobby, to start taking up arms and doing something about it physically? I don't know if there's another answer to it, but the system in America is so irredeemably corrupt that I don't see any other way out of it. And I'm
You mentioned that, I'd like to maintain hope the way that a lot of people do, but cynically, what I am left to conclude is that if indeed the situation in this country gets bad enough, that the parasite has drained us of so much of our resources, that we really are suffering on the magnitude that you're talking about. Unfortunately, the American people are so poorly informed and so uninterested in what is really going on that all that would have to happen is that the propaganda infrastructure in this country would simply blame it on the Arabs, and the Americans would be exactly where they were, psychologically speaking, on September 11th. Let's go get them. Let's go kill them. They're hurting us economically. we have to do this, blah, blah, blah. I don't see, other than something really big happening, like, the spies actually being caught, Israeli spies actually being caught detonating a nuclear weapon in the United States or something like that, and it actually making the news and staying on the news for longer than 30 seconds. Other than something like that happening, I don't see that the American people are going to put two and two together. Do you?
I have my doubts about it, but I sort of think that despite the stupidity of the American media, and organizations like Fox, which should actually be destroyed, Americans, I think, fundamentally know something is desperately wrong, and they know that they're being fed a bunch of garbage. But I think what's happened is Americans have allowed themselves to feel powerless. They've allowed themselves to think, there's nothing I can do about it. I just have to go with the flow. I have to stop trying to make a difference. Americans have to believe that they have the ability, collectively, to change their country. And to be quite honest, I'm looking at the web, I get web news headlines, and Fox News has become a joke. It's just a propaganda arm for the lobby and Rupert Murdoch, who should be arrested, frankly, for war crimes. The media in the country, in America, is the biggest threat to your freedom. Because you have no media. You have an occupied media.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, if you want to have proper media, proper revolution, a proper rising up of Republican sentiment, you need your own media that can't be censored by the lobby, which is why I'm very lucky that I have not been censored by the lobby since I got out of the mainstream news.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my website at gregfelton.com, and that has a lot of articles about the decline and fall of the American Republic. The Canadian parliamentary democracy is under serious assault. We have a moronic stooge of a man who has no regard for Parliament, for Canada, for anything to do with the law. He's there to serve Israel and George Bush, or as I call it, Is-ra-merica.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got some callers that I want to pull up. We've been waiting patiently here, so if you'll just suffer with us to go through this, of course, the hour did fly by pretty quickly, but we will be sure to have you back on soon. Let's bring up Michael in New York.
Hello, thank you. Guys, thanks for all your efforts in educating us as to the history with the Liberty and also our current situation in our government with the domestic enemies that are basically Israel, apparently mainly Israelis. And I just want to give the answer because your guest is great and he's hitting it all, but then he's not drawing the final conclusion. You can replace the congressmen, the presidents, and everybody else, but the Rockefeller family has to go in their cabal with their Federal Reserve System so they don't control our money supply, so they no longer have that material power to take control and influence all the politicians that we try to elect. That's the ultimate root of evil that's taking this country down, gentlemen.
Okay, and there is the music indicating we're going to a break. Mike, thanks for your call. We will be back in just a few minutes, and we'll let Greg answer that and then try to squeeze in a couple more callers. Everybody sit tight.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the last few minutes of the Liberty Hour. And, Greg, I just wanted to ask you a couple of things. The last caller made a very good point about the money and so on and so forth. I know we've all of our money to give to Israel for their aid. We've all money for the war. It's costing us $5,000 a second. And all the aid we bribe the foreign countries with, Egypt and Jordan and the rest of them, to fight Israel. And all the other monies it takes to run this company, country. How in the world, in God's green earth, are we ever going to pay off our debt? I don't care if we had 100% employment and all the taxes they could raise. I don't see it ever happening. You see any?
It isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen. And with respect to the Federal Reserve System, yes, your caller is quite right. It is a serious problem in how the United States allowed itself to
give away its money-making supply to some private banks is one of the most absurd parts of American history. It makes no sense at all. And it is frightening that the United States is in hock to this cabal of money makers and money changers. So it is a serious problem. But I mean, I didn't get into it in my book because that would have taken me too far afield from the specifics of the decline and fall of U.S. policy from oil into a pro-Israeli sycophancy. So that's one aspect of my book that I didn't get into, but somebody can take my book and take it into that direction if they like.
Okay, Greg, I know we got other callers on the line. Mark, please bring them up.
Yeah, let's bring up, Keith in Indiana.
Yes, good afternoon.
How you doing?
I agree with Greg completely. Finally, someone's telling us we don't have a political solution to our problem today in the world. It's too far gone, because if you go a little deeper and open it up, I mean, it isn't just Reagan, Bush, or even Roosevelt. I mean, it's long before that. The Bank of England controlled the world effectively for 250 years. Mm-hmm. 1844, the Rothschilds got control of it. They were powerful enough to create the conditions to cause a civil war here. We never returned to a constitutional republic. They established a legislative democracy. That's a military government.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing they had to do was demonetize silver and replace it with a gold unit. They had control enough of that to manipulate the market where they knew they'd get their central bank in. Rothschild never dealt in gold. He made contracts with kings where the payment on the loan had to be in gold, but he issued credit. When you're powerful enough through all your holding companies and corporations that you finance them with credit so they can buy the guns from the companies that they own and the munitions manufacturers, he's got a monopoly on all markets. Total control of agriculture and industry. I mean, this goes way back. And it all comes really to the spiritual problem we've had. We turned away from the law of God. We do not understand the Bible today. The law of God, I'm talking about. And most of the people don't even believe the law exists. It's all grace. These pastors are all trained from seminaries, which have been controlled by them. That also goes back 250 years. By 1850, they had complete control. They had the seminaries and total dispensational lives. So we have a spiritual problem.
Hey, Keith, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Did you ever live in Cincinnati?
Yes, I did.
I think I know you.
this is Mark?
Yeah, I think I know you. Hey, listen, send me an email, will you? Just look me up on the net. Actually, just email me at AmericanFreePress@yahoo.com, because I'd like to talk with you off the air if we could. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the end of the hour here. I apologize to the callers we could not bring up. Of course, our thanks to our special guests, first General David and then Greg Felton. Everybody, go to Greg's website, please, at gregfelton.com and order his book. We will definitely have both of these guests back on as soon as possible. There's the music. Phil, steer us out of these troubled waters.
Absolutely, Mark. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Liberty Hour. And let's remember the USS Liberty. Let's remember our fighting men and women that are giving their lives and their blood today. And remember, only we can take back America. And if we don't, we can blame it only on ourselves. Remember that, and God bless you. Have a great week, and we'll see you next weekend. Bye.